Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Vertical Space, a podcast at the intersection of technology and flight. We are your hosts, Jim Barry and Luka Tomjanovic, and here we look at the most important forces shaping the market of advanced air mobility, with a particular focus on why and how they matter to those building a business in this very exciting and growing industry.
It's not helicopters versus eVTOL. It's actually, it's new technology that's going to be performing and complementing helicopters, but they're going to be doing the exact same mission. We've been doing urban air mobility for decades, and now we're just going to have new technologies that's going to be coming in using that, hopefully being able to use that infrastructure.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to The Vertical Space. So today we talked to Jeff Smith, the chair of the Helicopter Association International. So it's a podcast. Think about it. You get the chair of HAI with his global perspective on helicopters and advanced air mobility. But you also receive the benefit of a perspective of a person who has been managing helicopters and has applied UAM for decades in some of the busiest airspaces in the world and has actually been flying vertical lift for decades, both in peacetime and in combat. What a great perspective we get from Jeff. This podcast will be an eye-opener, I think, for many, where the helicopter industry has embraced advanced air mobility. And the AAM industry should work collaboratively with the helicopter industry to ensure the same successes and overcome the challenges that will allow AAM to scale. Clearly, Jeff talks many times about the importance of focusing on infrastructure and having a place to land, and that this will have to be something that AAM has to overcome and won't be as easy as many people think. He talks about how the helicopter industry has decades of experience of working collaboratively in and overcoming challenges in many of the same areas where AAM will have to overcome, from infrastructure to air traffic to airspace management to urban transportation, where organizations like HAI have great relationships with civil aviation authorities throughout the world and have already identified the routes that will allow AAM to operate while minimizing the effect on communities. Listen to what Jeff says about what Igor Sikorsky would have said about this emerging technology and what will be a surprise to some, how the helicopter industry has been working with commercial airlines for decades, and how airlines may take ownership of vertical lift, what is envisioned to be a better price point for its passengers. Jeff also breaks down the cost of operating a helicopter and how he projects those costs onto advanced air mobility. And he gives, in a great section, and he gives advice on starting and running businesses in vertical lift because he's done it. He also talks about lessons learned from working with the FAA that make the certification process faster and better. And then finally, speaking of vertiports, how putting in a charging source in a metropolitan area comes with its own bureaucracy. Listen, this is a podcast that's chock full of good content for those in advanced air mobility, from the investor to the operator to the person who's starting a business. Thanks, Jeff, for joining us, and to our listeners, enjoy the podcast.
This episode of the Vertical Space podcast is brought to you by UAvionics. UAvionics is the leader in low size, weight, and power certified avionics for manned, unmanned, and advanced air mobility aircraft. Let UAvionics help you achieve your goals, whether that be type certification, airspace access, or beyond visual line of sight operations. UAvionics has certified and certifiable communications, navigation, and surveillance avionics for your aircraft. So head over to uavionics.com or Google it to see how you can start flying safer and move your platform forward into shared airspace.
Jeff Smith has a superior and diverse training background in both military and civil aviation. He has excelled as a pilot, a training instructor, directed operations, and managed heliport activities in both New York and Washington, D.C. He has served as a member of the Eastern Region Helicopter Council for over 15 years, and in that time, he served as chairman for 5 years, a director for 7, and VP of Operations for 5 years. Jeff has always been an active member within the Helicopter Association International. He serves on the board of directors and is the board chair. Jeff earned his airman certificate at Fort Rucker Army Base in Alabama. In the nearly 24 years since his first flight, Jeff has earned over 11,000 flight hours and over 700 emergency medical service in both combat and civilian metropolitan environments. While in active duty, Jeff spent 10 years serving diverse missions, including attack, air cavalry, general support, and medevac across North and South America, Europe, and the Middle East, including Operation Desert Storm. He gained extraordinary experience and expertise as an instructor pilot, safety officer, and battalion operations officer. So, Jeff, welcome to the Vertical Space, and please meet Luka Tomjanovic.
Nice to meet you, Luka.
Likewise, Jeff. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for the invite. I really appreciate being here.
So many people talk about helicopters as it relates to VTOLs and advanced air mobility. And so we've been really looking forward to this conversation. And I'm going to jump right into it with, is there anything that very few in the industry agree with you on?
Well, it depends on which industry you're referring to. I believe in the emerging technology industry. Are they focused on certification investment? Well, I don't think they disagree per se. I think they just do not see infrastructure as much as an issue as I do. I also think folks do not believe that the existing vertical lift community is embracing the new technology. And I think that's a myth.
Well, those are two great topics to talk about. So one is you're saying that they're not paying enough attention to infrastructure. I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, we had a great conversation, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Luca, on infrastructure, where it was a eye-opener to many. And then what you're saying is, yes, that there is a perception that the helicopter community is not embracing the technology. So tell us a little more about each one of them, if you could.
Most of my background is in, well, besides being a helicopter pilot, a lot of my background on my advocacy work has to deal with airports and heliports. And some of our biggest struggles is actually keeping heliports open. Currently, we're losing more heliports around the world than we are actually building them. So if that's the case, and with the emerging technology and some of the business scopes and the way they want to scale, they're going to need a lot more infrastructure. And I think that's something that has to be focused on, because it's, you know, on day one, when everything gets certified, people are going to want to start flying those vehicles and they're going to have a place to land. And I think it goes away from what the design is if they're just landing from airport to airport.
What's the reason for heliports going out of business?
I think a lot in the past, it has to do with obviously noise signatures with helicopters coming in urban places. I personally work up in New York, and there's a lot of litigation right now that's trying to close the three existing heliports that exist. I think people are affected by noise. Look, you know, vertical lift has a noise signature footprint to it, if you will. A lot of the politics behind it is a very small few is dictating the possible demise of those infrastructure.
Given that advanced air mobility may not have the same noise signature, does that present an opportunity to reopen them in the future?
No, I actually think once they're gone, they're gone. Let's think about, the two in the urban air mobility sector. Usually those places where those vertiports and heliports are built are very expensive real estate. Let's just take New York City, for example. Those three heliports sit in Manhattan. If one of those heliports were to close, they'd be repurposed pretty quickly and they'd be gone. So trying to go through the process to get that zoned and going through all of the necessary steps, which include going through the community boards to get them reopened, I think would be a very difficult process.
When you, and I know we're drilling into infrastructure really quickly here, and I want to step back in just a minute. I think it's so important as it relates to advanced air mobility. When you see that the missions, a lot of these companies, that even those that have gone public in the last year, when you see that their mission literally requires them to operate not only in the big cities, but throughout the big cities, so it's really convenient to get to them from the offices. What's your first reaction to that, Jeff? Are they being realistic?
It depends on how the actual technology emerges, just so we can put things in perspective. I personally, in the HEI and our philosophy, is that it's not helicopters versus eVTOL. It's actually, it's new technology that's going to be performing and complementing helicopters, but they're going to be doing the exact same missions. I mean, helicopters in New York City, I hate to keep pounding on New York City, but it's a great example. We've been doing urban air mobility for decades. And now we're just going to have new technologies going to be coming in using that, hopefully being able to use that infrastructure. So scaling to some of the stuff I've seen, I think, in some of those urban areas, it's going to be a challenge. And that's why I think there needs to be some collaboration and investment on that piece of the future, on is infrastructure, especially if they want to scale. Like you said, if they want to turn into the Uber of the skies, then you're going to have a lot of more vertiports in a lot of different areas. And I just think that's a challenge. I think it's definitely one to overcome, especially when you talk about affordability. That's my favorite part of the emerging technologies, affordability, to where more people are going to be able to use it. Once that take holds, I think you'll have a lot better public acceptance.
We will talk about the second category of things that some people don't agree with you on, which is the perception that the helicopter industry hasn't embraced advanced air mobility. So tell us a little bit about the industry, if you could.
But it's huge. Just look at the mission set. Helicopters do air ambulance. They're heavy oil and gas firefighting, law enforcement, obviously the military, electronic news gathering, movie making, and of course, intermodal transportation. I mean, the commuter, charter, it not only just all over the country, but it's all over the world. Thousands of helicopters moving around the world doing those very, very important missions.
And the use case for the helicopter, you mentioned, you know, many of the different ways that they're used. What's the use case of the helicopter? As we envision advanced air mobility of the future, how do you see some of the use cases remaining with helicopters? And how do you have, see them potentially advanced air mobility taking the blending of AAM with those same use cases?
Just some of those missions I just mentioned, there's a lot of capability that the eVTOL will be able to do. Just look at the utility and power lines and stuff like that. The companies that have been using helicopters are already integrating drones and UAS into that mission set. So there's going to be a lot of that. I will always believe that helicopters and eVTOL will always coexist. They're complementary of each other. We're a long way before a eVTOL will be able to lift a 40,000-pound air conditioner and put it on top of a skyscraper.
Jeff, tell us a little bit about, as you see the blending of AAM with helicopters, and you're saying there's a perception that the helicopter industry isn't going to welcome them, or they will not welcome as much as others have.
On the surface, people want to believe that the emerging technology is going to come in and take over the helicopter industry. Pilots are going to lose their job. They're going to be cheaper, so helicopters are dinosaurs and all that. And that's just not true. I'm in this business. Today's my first day as the chair of HAI, and I've been around HAI for a long time. Helicopter Association International, the biggest trade organization around vertical lift. It's a global organization. We have a trade show. One of our biggest trade shows, obviously, is Heli Expo. This year is going to be, next year is going to be Atlanta. We're going to European Rotors in November. We have outreach with all the civil aviation authorities around the world. And now let me just explain a little bit more about that misnomer of how we're not embracing the new technology. Jim Viola is the president and CEO of HAI. He has a very extensive military background with UAS and drones, not to mention his career in safety with the FAA. And he's also the lead advisor of the Vertical Aviation Safety Team, which is embracing the new emerging technology. But the CEO of HAI, Mike Hertzendorf, also from a senior military background, Special Forces, was the CEO of New Air, which specifically dealt with integration of emerging technology in the national airspace. We have several working groups, one specifically dealing with UAS. We have the Flying Neighborhood Environmental Working Group, which was led by one of the smartest people I know, Juliet Page, which brought together a team with NASA, Volpe, and FAA, and specifically delved down into the emerging technology and what that sound footprint will be. We also have the Utility Patrol and Construction Working Group, which deals with all the power lines and the people out in the field, which are already integrating the eVTOL and the UAS into their companies. We also have appointed a special advisor to the board of directors with his title as an emerging technology. It is ingrained all the way through Helicopter Association International.
Reconciling that to your earlier comment that there is still a lot of perception that the helicopter industry is either not embracing new technology or that this will be some kind of a competition between technologies. What do you think is responsible for this zero-sum mentality?
Lack of education. There's just people that are inside the industry and outside the industry that don't understand how they complement each other. They don't understand that a lot of these big companies are already integrating the emerging technology into their business already. So it's not I'm going to go out of business because, company A is going to go out of business because company B came in with emerging technology. Company A is just going to integrate eVTOL and emerging technology into its business. And I think that's what people are missing. And there is the scary tactic of people, pilots, mechanics, thinking they're going to lose their job because of all this new technology. And I just don't see that. There will be some streamlining for sure, but I think they complement each other. And I think they're going to see that. And as far as the urban air mobility and the whole pilot maintainer situation, I think we're way off before you actually see unmanned aircraft carrying passengers around big cities.
When we look at the helicopter growth in general, what have been the greatest tailwinds and headwinds?
That's a great question. Because if you think about it, since the helicopter was invented and to where the helicopter is today, look at the change in technology that's happened already. So that's why I always go back to, this is just emerging technology inside of the same segment, because we've already went through this. It's bold. It's, you know, it's moving it further, faster. But if you look at the past, I mean, look at the first helicopter that was built, and then look at the current helicopters now and the type of technology that they have. I can tell you that, and the negative things that help always affect helicopters is the economics affects people and being able to afford to fly in helicopters like that. And if the economy is bad, the helicopter industry takes a hit as well. But so does all of aviation. I think aviation is tied to the economics.
What can advanced air mobility, and I'm including drones and eVTOLs in that category, what can they learn from the helicopter industry and its past as it grows and transitions to greater market adoption? You mentioned economics is a big consideration, as is noise pollution. Are there any other high-level strategic takeaways?
I think the new players and the emerging technology need to collaborate with people that have been in this field for a long time. It's the same mission set. They're not coming in with a new mission. They're coming in and they're performing the same mission that's been there for quite some time. So I would really embrace people that have been in this field for a long time and use those challenges that we've went through already. And like, let's, you know, not to pound on infrastructure again, but we're very well versed in where infrastructure is going. And no matter what the technology moving forward is going to need that infrastructure. And let's talk about the other one is we live in a place in the current helicopter world where we're constantly negotiating in urban areas with airspace. And airspace is a very, you know, in those areas, airspace is very small. It's a very small area to operate. And we have great relationships with the civil aviation authorities like the FAA and carving out that airspace. So I think it has to be a collaboration. And I would tell them it would be much more efficient if that collaboration can actually happen. And look for the people and organizations that have been down this road already.
And speaking of fear of losing jobs or being replaced, what's your thought on the recent change of course that the FAA had as it relates to certification of eVTOL, guiding the industry towards 2117B? The powered lift pilot certificate category as a requirement for eVTOL. What are the ripple effects among the helicopter pilot community and their transition to some of those jobs involving eVTOLs?
I actually think the helicopter pilots are a great space to fulfill that position. It's vertical lift. We understand it very well. We understand flying in the lower altitude. The certification process, I think, is still going to be going back and forth. I think the FAA is doing a great job, but I think they're still trying to hone down exactly what that's going to look like. And for the pilots, I mean, you can look across the board in aviation. I mean, we could have a whole nother podcast if you want to talk workplace, workforce development. We are in a pilot and mechanic shortage. So as far as people losing their jobs and not being able to transition to the other side, I just don't see that as a, I just don't see that as a problem. I think a bigger problem is getting people to fill seats.
One of the areas that the eVTOLs have targeted as a potential customer are the big airlines, as well as the regionals and the commuters and parts of business aviation as well. So that's a big change from what helicopters have targeted. What do you think of what they're doing is realistic? And what do you think is a little bit pie in the sky, given your vertical lift experience?
So here's the difference. I think that's also a myth, because the current vertical lift has been doing airport transfers. I mean, I've been flying in the New York area for 24 years. I can't tell you how many trips I've made flying customers to back and forth to Kennedy, LaGuardia, Newark, to whatever airline they were choosing. I think the airlines are making that investment, and I think it's rightfully so. I think it's fantastic for the vertical lift community, is that now they're going to take ownership of that mode of transportation. They're going to be using vehicles that are going to have a better price point that they can fill those seats with more people. I think right now, chartering a helicopter for one person to go from Kennedy to New York is very expensive, and that cuts out a lot of people. You start getting more affordable technology that can make that trip. And that's a perfect trip if you think about it performance-wise on eVTOL. It's a perfect trip because it goes back and forth to the airports and more people can use it. And the airlines can offer that as some of their perks to be flying on the airlines. I think it's a great step.
So the airlines are more apt to adopt the eVTOL technology. You know, one is, I know Lilium, when they went out with an announcement, they mentioned that people may be more apt to fly in these vehicles than in a helicopter. Two is the cost to operate will be significantly less. And then three, I mean, the noise exposure has to be considered, right? There's an awful lot of areas you just can't fly because of the noise, you know, both the audio and the visual noise. Are those three of the reasons that they may be more adopted and perhaps operated by the airlines?
Well, I think the biggest reason the airlines are looking at it is affordability. Mm-hmm. I think the first one with some people who would get in a eVTOL as opposed to a helicopter, that personal preference. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I think it's flying. It's flying. Some people are comfortable flying and some people aren't. But when it comes down to affordability of how many people they can get off a 737 to get on one of those eVTOLs to fly into the city, it has to come down to the price point. The noise issue that you're talking about, helicopters versus eVTOL, I think you'll have some of the same challenges in the eVTOL doing that mission that the helicopter would. Now, the helicopter, we haven't seen exactly what the noise signature is going to be on some of that new equipment. It's going to be a lot quieter. But also to scale, if it's affordable and you're using it more, then it's interesting you actually said it, the visual noise is people are going to be seeing a lot more activity in the air going over their houses back and forth. So I think those same challenges are going to be there. So I think that comes down to, again, going back to people that have already done this and look at what kind of routes are going to work to affect the least amount of people.
Jeff, let's drill into economics a little bit, please. You've been in the industry long enough and you've flagged economics and affordability several times in our conversation so far. So what are the main drivers for economics in the helicopter urban transport use case? And are you convinced that advanced air mobility can improve that given what you know about unit cost and network operations of these new vehicles?
From everything that I've seen and read, there's no doubt that these vehicles are going to be cheaper to operate. And I don't necessarily just believe it's, you know, fuel versus battery or whatever, because you have your own challenges when you come into electric. They're going to be, I think they're going to end up in the long run being cheaper to purchase and cheaper to operate. Because look, flying a helicopter in an urban area right now is expensive. It's gas and how much they cost and insurance. And I mean, think of all of them. But those are all going to apply to the emerging technology as well. I just don't think as much.
Can you give us a breakdown of the total cost involved in running a helicopter operation today? What are the main buckets?
The acquisition, obviously, is a big one to start off with. Then you get into employment, payroll, training. Another big one that we're facing is obviously insurance. And then the operating is, you know, you have insurances on the components, you have fuel itself. And then in those, and again, on those urban areas, and then I'll talk about New York and LA and Miami, the places and the heliports where those aircraft land is also very expensive. They have pretty hefty landing fees.
Tell us about those who are making the helicopters today, those who've accepted the potential of advanced air mobility and those who haven't quite accepted it?
Well, I think every manufacturer that I'm aware of is definitely looking at the emerging technology and whether they want to be in that field. I think you have to. And then they have to make their own choice of whether that fits their business model. But there's also just not the typical manufacturers, the current manufacturers, but you see a lot of other new companies coming into this space building these kind of vehicles, something you would never think of, car manufacturers and things like that. It's, and you know, we're at the beginning of this new change in vertical lift, and it's great to see a lot of different people looking at it.
What do you think is the path for continued helicopter technological evolution?
It will continue. One thing is, I'm guaranteeing you, is you won't see the manufacturers stop making the typical helicopter. Because like I said, it's going to be complementary. The eVTOL is not going to replace the helicopter. But as I said, in the past, you've seen a lot of technology advances in helicopters. Just look at the differences in efficiency, noise signature, safety, all of those things have evolved since Sikorsky flew his first helicopter.
So speaking of Sikorsky, which is 30 miles down the road for me, Jeff, how would he view advanced air mobility and what would he like and not like about it that's anything different than what he's already told us?
I had the great pleasure to actually talk with Sergei Sikorsky, Igor's son. And I actually believe when we talk about emerging technology and all the buzz around emerging technology, I think Igor Sikorsky would laugh at us, because if you want to talk about emerging technology, think what he was starting with. He was starting with a piece of paper and a pencil, and look what he got accomplished. So I think he would probably see this as humorous that, you know, it's this huge thing. But at the same time, I think he would be very happy to see his legacy continuing on, because he is the father of vertical lift.
So if he was going to start from scratch today, would he, and if he's going to build 100 vehicles, would 70 of them be the future eVTOLs and 30 be the helicopters that we see today?
No, I don't think he would see it that way, because there are so many missions that the helicopter will continue to do, and they have to have vehicles to do them.
Jeff, let's talk about running and building a business in vertical lift. You've started aviation businesses before. What was that like? What are the key takeaways for entrepreneurs?
It's a lot of hard work, and you have to stick with it to the end. There's a lot of challenges in it that will want you to pack up and leave and try something else. But if you stick with it, it's very rewarding. Starting a new business, a lot of it comes through, like these guys are going through right now. It's certification and getting through the regulatory process of getting just being able to fly. And then after that, where are you going to fly and who's going to regulate that? And, you know, when you start flying passengers, it's more regulatory. And I don't think it's overburdensome, but I do believe it's necessary. It's just there, and it's very challenging.
What were some of the most memorable moments on that path of starting a business? And maybe we can talk about obtaining a Part 135 certificate.
You got time for that? So, yeah. So I started one from scratch, one helicopter. A rewarding piece of that was getting the decision from my principals and my partners to move in that direction. That was great. But the most rewarding part was when my POI, principal operator inspector from the FAA, actually issued my 135 certificate, because it was 18 months of a lot of work in between. So it was fascinating. And then I actually started doing trips that day. It was great. Like I told you, there was, over those 18 months, there was a lot of times where we had to make that decision of whether we're going to continue to keep going or we're just going to pack up and walk away. And we stuck with it. It was successful.
What were some of the greatest barriers on that journey?
Well, one is, if you're getting into the business and you have an aircraft and it takes you 18 months to get a certificate to where you can operate it, you have two choices. You can either A, go on somebody's certificate temporarily until yours is done, which a lot of people don't really like. And the FAA doesn't like it, because it's a lot more work with conformity and stuff like that. So it's very expensive to have this asset that's not making money for 18 months. And that's what happened to us, because we actually moved from a certificate to that went out of business. So and that's when we decided to do our own. But it was 18 months without making money. That was one of the most difficult parts, just the fluctuation of the market. It was post 9/11, so there was a lot of uncertainty, and there was times where there was delays in getting some of the administrative stuff done, and then rescheduling on conformity, and so it just seemed like it was a very daunting, and the goalposts kept moving. So those were difficult times, but like I said, I had some really great partners, and we went the distance.
If you had to do it all over again, would you change anything?
Yes, I would, only because I know what I know. I could have been much more efficient, and the way I dealt with the FAA on getting that certificate, I could have done it in a less time, I believe.
I think the entrepreneurs in our audience are dying to hear some of those nuggets of how to be more efficient with interacting with the FAA. Do you mind sharing a little bit of your lessons learned?
So one of the big ones is to save money. I did all of the administrative pieces, writing manuals, the operations manuals, training manuals, all of that stuff, the LOIs. There's a lot of back and forth with the FAA as far as stuff that they need you to write. If I did it again, I'd actually hire a professional service to do those things.
Jeff, last week I was at the Wings Club in New York, and they had three of the leading eVTOL companies there. Let's say you were in the audience. As they presented their capabilities and their views of the future, what would be one question you would ask them, or as it relates to some of the challenges they may have that may not be obvious today?
Just coming back from my background, I would always go back to infrastructure and where are these vehicles going to land? And I think that's a very important piece that everybody needs to pay attention to.
In addition to the physical infrastructure, itself. What do you see as some opportunities in the heliport, vertiport space, perhaps some technology company opportunities there to enable operations?
I believe a lot of the existing heliports can definitely be modified to service the newer technology. It will come with its own challenges. I mean, you have to putting in a charging source in a metropolitan area comes with its own bureaucracy, especially in an area that's already negatively looked at. They would look at that as, you know, expansion. So I think there would be some challenges there, some pushback. But I think the existing facilities can definitely be modified. And then, you know, like you talked about earlier, then they got to think about where these things are going to go and where they're going to land outside of what's current in the infrastructure.
What about the operations of vertiports itself? If you zoom into the weeds, the level of penetration of digital technologies and the back office operational stuff, how saturated is that market with technology? Is there an opportunity there to grow?
Absolutely. And it's different technology. I think there's a lot of room for growth.
So what are some of the biggest pain points that you see in heliport operations today?
I don't see a lot of pain points when it comes to scheduling. There are times in those heliports and vertiports where there's peak, right? Sunday afternoons or something like that. So scheduling, the heliports don't schedule landings. They schedule parking, but they don't schedule landings. So there are some times where you may have to hold one or two times waiting to land. As far as the passengers and scheduling and stuff like that, I think we're already starting to see the technology evolve. One of the operators up in New York uses app-based scheduling software for their passengers, and it's pseudo-scheduled. So I think it's already evolving to assist in that segment.
Jeff, somebody was asking me yesterday, with all the attention on pilot training, what's it like to fly a helicopter versus a VTOL, and what's the training level required?
I am both an airplane pilot and a helicopter pilot. And I think helicopter pilots is a little bit harder to fly because you have to learn how to hover. You got to go in that third axis. But I don't know that the eVTOL is going to be, you know, nobody knows because there's not, you know, there's not a lot of information out there how it flies. I can't wait to fly one. I know that aerodynamics is going to be obviously quite different. There's no tail rotor. They're using propellers instead of rotors, and, you know, and they're going to offset very much like the CH-47 does. The Chinook doesn't have a tail rotor. So it's all different, using different lift and thrust patterns to get it to turn and fly. So I think that's very interesting. But with it, and this is going to come a lot of automation that's going to help you to do that. So I'm very excited to see. I'm very excited to fly. And I think it's going to be easier.
What do you think the impact of simplified vehicle operations and increasing autonomy are on the overall safety, market growth, and public perception for these vehicles? And I should add, cultural pushback from existing pilot community. How do you see that evolving over time?
Well, like I said, I think that's there are some in the pilot community that are pushing back because they think it's replacement very much. You know, I think it comes from the whole idea of automation, like when a lot of the manufacturers went to automation and started laying off people. I think that's where that fear comes from. And I think that's why automation is such a scary word. But if you look at aviation, there's always going to be a human element to it. There's got to be a human element to operating these vehicles just because of the different skill sets that are going to be taken to accomplish those different missions. You still need a power line person looking at the power line that's going to see if it's damaged or not. Or, you know, so you may have it to where that's two jobs or the same job or whatever, but there's always going to be human element controlling. So I don't have that fear. It'll be streamlined. It will be streamlined, but it's not going to put the existing helicopter industry out of business.
So Jeff, how do you see the next 5-10 years playing out? I mean, there are many people who say the initial changes in aviation from advanced air mobility will be first felt by the helicopter industry. So how do you see it played out in the next 5-10 years? How is it going to transition, and what role is AI playing in that process?
Well, we're very much integrated in that process. As I told you, if you just look at the makeup of HAI and it's the mission statement and the working groups and the and the issues and the initiatives that those working groups are working on are all centric and they're around the new technology. It's definitely first and foremost in our minds. I think in the next 5-10 years, you'll see a great leap forward in eVTOL and urban air mobility. I don't think it's going to start in the metropolitan areas like everybody thinks. I think they get their feet wet. They're going to have to do their tests and stuff in much more suburban areas before they hit those markets. But I do believe there'll be a fast pace. I think you're going to see packages for sure. And like I said, our utility members are already using that new technology. So it's coming. I think public buy-in may take a little longer, but it's definitely in the future.
And what advice would you give to somebody who wants to start a business in advanced air mobility? Boy, who better to get advice from somebody who's been in the helicopter business as long as you have?
100%. 100%. If you want to get into the vertical lift business, you need to find somebody that's been there before. Even though it's new technology or emerging technology, it is the same mission set. There's no new mission here. It's the same missions in the same areas using new equipment. So I would definitely seek out organizations like HAI for sure. And because of the, you know, we're very well versed in this market and have depth of expertise.
Jeff, you say that it's the same mission. Can I challenge you on that?
Sure.
I think when people talk about advanced air mobility potentially being a $1 trillion industry by 2040 and $10 trillion by 2050, it has to have an enormously expanded mission from what helicopters are doing today. I mean, the vision is that normal people will be flying advanced air mobility, that the airlines will be either contracting with or operating these advanced air mobility vehicles. The mission is far more expansive than with advanced air mobility. Am I getting that wrong? Or are you just being very precise with how you define mission?
Well, it's the same mission of carrying people from destination point A to point B. And it is that same mission. I can tell you that when, and I'll give you a for example, because you're absolutely right. The scale at which these companies are talking about going in urban air mobility is vastly different than what we have today. Vastly different. The scale is so much larger. It will be more. And there's where a lot of challenges will be. Where are they going to land? How's the airspace going to be cut up? If you look at the New York airspace, Miami, LA, those huge urban areas, look at Paris, London, look at those areas and just look on a map of how the airspace is already congested and where this drastic increase of mobility is going to put itself. I think those are the challenges. You're absolutely right. But I will tell you, if I get someone, I've been a manager for 24 years in New York. And when I hire somebody that's not from the New York area, it's an eye-opening experience for them with their first flight through great training and checkouts and stuff like that. After 2-3 months, they're very comfortable flying around it. And I think that's what's going to happen is we just got to continue to push through that comfort zone and say, okay, we can do this. But I do believe it's the same mission. For instance, it's going to more than likely going to be a 135 operation, which is on-demand carrier. Same mission. It's just using different aircraft. And like you said, definitely these companies are going to want to move it to scale.
What's the most common misconception or misunderstanding on the topic of helicopter operations or AAM operations?
I think it comes down to the misconception is it's a replacement and they don't see it as a complement. I think you're always going to see the current type of helicopters doing personal transport, as you will eVTOL. I think eVTOL is going to definitely go to a different segment of the population because it's going to be more affordability. But there's going to be other people that rather fly in a twin engine or a two pilot helicopter. I think it comes down to personal preference when it comes to personal transportation.
I think the other misunderstanding or misconception, which you stated earlier, which I think has come out a lot in our podcasts, is the challenge of infrastructure. You know, where are you going to land? And you've said it many times throughout the podcast. And I don't think the investors in these vehicles have taken into account the risk of the infrastructure, heliport, these coming about as fast as they need to come out for them to be able to get the financial returns that have been promised. That's a risk that not many people are looking at. And I don't think many investors are aware of. Somebody approaches you and said, oh, I heard you did a podcast with the vertical space. And if you were going to summarize this last hour for them, how would you summarize? And what would you most want them to take away from the podcast?
I would tell them it was a very great conversation. I think everybody should listen to it. And the biggest takeaway is the emerging technology is coming and it doesn't have to be adversarial if everybody would just understand that the two complement each other. And we really need to focus on the other challenges past certification.
Luke, anything else from you?
No, thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you so much for your time, for being on the podcast, and for sharing your thoughts and insights.
It was a great conversation. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, that's a wrap for today. Thank you for listening to the Vertical Space Podcast. Reach out if there are topics that you would like us to discuss, and goodbye until the next episode. Unless mentioned, this podcast is in no way endorsing or promoting any person and or company mentioned, and all opinions within the podcast are solely that of the presenters. The Vertical Space makes no guarantees, warranty, or representation of any information given in this podcast. Any information given is for informational purposes and should be used at your own risk. This podcast is for general, educational, and entertainment purposes only.